Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
This show is made possible by its patrons. At patreon.com/thePhileas Club, and the link is in the show notes, you can support the show financially. If you enjoy it, if you think it's fun, if you think it's cool, if you think it's informative, if you think it's useful, then maybe consider throwing a few bucks our way. patreon.com/thePhileas Club. Hey everyone, and welcome to the Phileas Club. This is episode 139, and we talk about the French and their love-slash-maybe-hate relationship with strikes and demonstrations. Hello, everyone, and Happy New Year to all around the world, whether you are in the Southern Hemisphere, the Northern Hemisphere, the left of the political spectrum, the right of the political spectrum, or anywhere else, whoever you are loved, appreciated, at least by me. Well, I mean, there are a couple of you there in the corner that I don't like that much, but let's just say that even for today, I'm going to tell you Happy New Year, even to you. My name is Patrick Beja. This is the Phileas Club. And on this show, we get people from different countries, different parts of the world, and we get together and we talk about stuff in an open, welcoming, heartwarming environment. Wholesome is our middle name. And usually we talk about the news. And today we're going to do kind of a hybrid show. It's like half news, but also culture, as we sometimes do those specials. We try to do them every month. And we're going to be talking about France. And when you think of France, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? Is it like wine? Is it good food? Is it like escargot, snails? Or maybe it could be strikes and people going in the street to demonstrate their frustrations about things that are happening. Well, that's what we're going to cover. I wanted to talk about wine and bread and good food, but then I invited Kasim, who is right there, and he was like, nah, and we're just going to talk about strikes. Welcome, Kasim. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I hope I'm part of the people you actually like and not the other part you don't really like.
Oh, yeah. You have to be, like, really bad in order for me to not like you. Like, I'm thinking about, I don't know, like, genocidal maniacs and Nazis that I punch in the face with glee and stuff like that. So I don't think you're a Nazi.
No,
you're not a Nazi. Okay, so see, yeah, it's fine. You are French, however, as is exemplified by your lovely accent.
Yeah, I think everyone gets it.
And we're going to be talking about strikes. And I have to say that I'm not exactly sure how to approach this discussion. I know I want to have it. I think it's going to be valuable to the listeners because strikes in France and demonstrations are something that is a little bit different. Even unions are something that is a little bit different from other countries, especially the US, but I think many other countries from what I've seen. But it's so much part of the culture and part of me, because I'm very French, but at the same time, I'm very not French because I'm so outside of the country. So I don't know exactly how this is going to go, but we're going to try to do the best we can. Before we start, I do want to, for people to have a little bit of context, talk about where we stand ourselves, us two personally, let's say on the political spectrum, so that people understand where we're coming from. I would define myself as center-right on the French political spectrum. Which I think for most people outside of France would probably mean center to center left. I don't know if Kassim, you would agree with that characterization from what you know of me.
I think it's something like equivalent to the US Democrats, I think.
Yeah.
Right.
So in the US, I would be considered left wing, definitely. But I know that a lot of my friends in France consider me to be a right wing person.
Yeah, because the French spectrum is a bit different from other countries.
All right, so you would agree that it's fair to call me center right, roughly, even in France, or
yeah?
Okay, cool, excellent. I thought you might you might say like, no, you're like a conservative, horrible bourgeois capitalist. Although maybe you know center right fits that description as well for French people.
Well, I'm preparing the ground for when I'm gonna come out as a heavy leftist.
Yeah, okay. So I think from what I know of you, and we don't, you know, we're not like best friends for 20 years. I know you a little bit, but I think you're center left, maybe left, like your affinities are with the Socialist Party, which is left of the political spectrum. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's even in the, it's equivalent to the left and in the Socialist Party in France, but even the Socialist Party in France now have a wide spectrum of ideas sometimes. So even inside this party, it would be the left.
The left wing of the
left wing, yeah.
So I think on that front, it's important to explain, first of all, I've been talking about this a lot in this show, because again, especially for our American friends, when you say socialism, people think about communism, which are two very different things. Obviously, socialism has a long history as a term and as a political movement, but let's say in modern times, socialism is equivalent to, let's say, social democracy, which is completely in line with, it's like modulations of capitalism as we know it throughout the Western world. And it plays on the importance of safety nets. So unemployment benefits, social security, all of those are, you know, more or less emphasized. Yeah, go ahead.
It's going to, I think the basis is that it's starting from the capitalism and going to something more on equality and equality.
Equality, and, yeah.
Yeah, and working to there with a democratic way of doing things and not like trying to take the power by weapons and
by force or by anything force, like that. Yeah, and even more importantly, like the basis is a free market. Like there's no one, I think, even on the leftist wings of the Socialist Party, will argue that we should have a centralized market without free competition. Like that makes no sense to anyone. Some people will argue, you know, some services need to be controlled by the state in order for them to be equally distributed throughout the country and the different regions, because some are economically less interesting to companies to serve, and so they wouldn't be served. Things like, you know, I don't know, essential infrastructure services like electricity, health, again, education, these kinds of things are more or less controlled by the state. But it is specific areas which I think understandably everyone, even in very capitalistic countries like the US, people could argue, well, you need that kind of education, this kind of education, vouchers and private schools and these kinds of things, and private hospitals. But the discussion is happening about how much of it should be private and how much of it should be public. And it's the same in France. We do have private schools. We do have private hospitals, obviously. It's just like the safety net, the basis of it is usually, or at least that's the ideal, available to everyone because the state is very involved in those things. But no one would say you can't, you know, have a free market and free enterprise. So it's definitely, if you remember anything from this discussion, nothing to do with communism.
And to clarify on my position and to come back to that question, I think I would vote in the US for some between Warren and Sanders, depending on the topic. But I'm there on the political spectrum, actually.
Right. And Sanders is considered, I would say, even for France, some of the things Sanders is talking about are... I don't know his policies very, very well, but my impression is that even for France, he would be like definitely on the left of the political spectrum, right?
Yep.
Yeah. All right.
I agree.
Okay. So that's the set is set. And we should probably talk about this specific strike, what it's about. I'm sure people know this large strike is about retirement and the retirement reform that the government is trying to put in place. And a lot of the country is unhappy about the way it's going. And the strike started 4 weeks ago or so. There was kind of a quieting down during the holiday period. But it's, I would say, one of the more important strikes in the history of the country. There have been, I would say, every 10 to 20 years, there's a very large social movement, as we call them in the country. And they are characterized by strikes and demonstrations that keep going for weeks and weeks. This is probably one of the longest ones we've known.
And I would say that it's a strike that is being done by a lot of workers through... several places. Like, it's not just the transport or the teachers, it's also you had the dancer at the opera and other kind of workers that are on strike, and it's not just the transport or one particular side of one
society
job.
Yeah, because obviously the one that is the most impactful is transportation. I think that's the case in most countries when there are strikes. You really notice when transportation workers are on strike. And the metro and train is where things usually start to get heated in France, because obviously that affects people's everyday life. And to give you an idea of the scope of this current strike, it's... especially in Paris, in the capital, where metro and public transport is so important, it's not 100% blocked. Like, you do have some metro lines that run one train every four trains or something like that during specific hours. But most people have difficulties getting to work and would spend hours and hours on a trip that would usually take them, you know, 45 minutes. They would spend 3 hours. And it's difficult to get to work. And I'm guessing most people don't go to work every weekday. During that time,
I've been remote working for the past 5 weeks, 6 weeks.
Right. I think this is it's actually paralyzing large parts of the country. And the last time that there was this bad a strike, I remember it, and I think a lot of people who are my age remember it. It was in 1995, and it lasted 3 weeks, so less. Long than this current strike, and the country was completely paralyzed. It had consequences on the economy that were dire. A lot of companies had to close down because they couldn't get inventory and stuff like that. I think it was about the retirement reform back then, still. Yep. Already, I guess. Yeah. So this is really one of the big societal issues that we have been continuously debating in the country. And as Kasim said, it's not just the transportation workers and the unions, which in France, I think unions work. That's also a point that I think is interesting to make. Unions work a little bit differently than in some other countries I've seen. They are not mandatory, unlike in a country like Germany, for example, and they tend to be... I think in my experience, the unions that aren't mandatory to be a part of, you don't have to choose a union when you start working. You can
in just... fact, I think only something like under 10% of workers
Yeah.
are in union in France, I think.
Even less than that, I don't know the exact numbers, but it's very low. And it means that very often the members of the unions are the most convinced, the most active, and the most, I might even say, radical members of the worker force. So that gives you an idea of the, I would say, the train, the head of the train. That is, how do you call it? The locomotive. Ah, damn it. So they are the head of it. But as Kasim said, at least, and especially in the case of this demonstration, it's not just them. It's large parts of the worker. I mean, there are definitely the motivating elements, but they have a lot of people who agree with them, and not just in the traditionally unionist sectors like transportation. We've seen strikes in many different areas of the country. Kasim mentioned the dancers at the opera and teachers and other things like that. Is it fair? My impression, Kasim, you can tell me if that's fair or not. My impression is that it's still a majority of the public sector, or transportation, and public sector that is actively demonstrating and striking against the reform. The private sector, maybe they agree with the demonstrations, but the strike hasn't spread to any of the private sector, is my impression. Is that fair?
Right, I think it's you could argue that because the Yellow Jacket are also protesting against this reform, you and I think the Yellow Jacket are mostly populated by members of the private sector. I think the private sector is supporting, at least most of them are supporting the strikes. But yeah, I don't think the strike has reached that far into the private sector yet. Let's just say that in France, the public workers are more often on strike and protesting. Maybe because there are more, I don't know. It's really a culture in France of I think of the to like you said to the you said that some a small part of the union leads the effort to strike and protest. And I think it's the same between public and private. Public is leading the charge and private sector is following and supporting, but not acting as much as the public sector. I don't think it's that.
I think there are two things I want to dive into here, and I don't know how much we're going to talk about the specifics of this strike. Maybe we'll get back to it, but I want to harp on something you just said. There's a culture of strike in France, and it's the best way I can describe it for people who look at it and don't understand. It's almost like, I don't know, religion in the US or the Second Amendment in the US?
I was gonna I prepared that to yeah I was gonna compare it to the Second Amendment in the US and the right to have weapons. I think it's almost the same thing because it's really a cultural thing that came from history, I think.
It seems some people have been linking it to the revolution, which is an essential part of our history. I think if when I think back of high school history lessons, the one thing that I guess maybe the two things that I remember the most are the kingship and the revolution. And of course, the two are very much linked. But the revolution is like the defining historical act of modern French history. And I would say that even, again, when we talk about left wing, right wing in France, no one is going to argue that you shouldn't have public health, socialized medicine, I guess is how some people call it. No one will argue, no, we don't need that. Or no one will argue, we don't need unemployment benefits. people might argue how it should be implemented and how much we should get, but no one will say, no, you don't need it. Everyone should get unemployment benefits and free education and all of that. I think it's the same with the right to strike. The right to strike is extremely important to, I would say, the entire population. Some people will tell you, well, I disagree with this strike. I think they're going too far. Or in the case of the retirement reform, which is, you know, I don't know how much we're going to delve into that, as I said, because every country is having that issue with retirement and the reform and how far they should go. But some people will say, I don't think we should strike for this, or the reform the government is proposing is good or bad or whatever. Or I don't think we should strike in this one, or it's lasted too long. But no one will tell you strikes aren't good. Like, everyone will tell you, yes, we need to be able to strike freely, and the right to strike is protected, enshrined by legislation in the country. And that's something everyone would approve, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's come from, you said it, it's from the French Revolution, but also from the past victories of strikes. We talked about 95, where the reform, the retirement reform was actually cancelled, I think, by the government.
Mostly, yeah.
But before that, the strikes and the union got the minimum wages, and the work week of 40 hours, I think, was from a strike also. And maybe the I believe the guaranteed pay holidays also was a result of a strike. So you have a history, a long past history of strikes proving that you can get new rights for workers. And I think from that, there is a culture of protecting those rights by striking and by protesting in the streets.
I think one thing that is a little bit different from other, because I think there's, you know, getting those rights in every country was gotten through the left wing of the political spectrum bumping against the right wing and getting things for workers. I think it's, and you know, I think some people would argue that actually the right wing, like the employers, for different reasons, because they wanted their workers to be able to work, agreed to give like health benefits and less working time because they needed people to be able to work, but they also agreed to it. So, but anyway, that doesn't even matter. The point I'm getting to is in other countries, what I've seen, even in the US, where unions are very strong, I think there's a misconception in France that Americans don't have unions. That's not necessarily the case. There are some sectors of the industry that are heavily unionized, and where when the unions says something, it's like thunder striking, like everything stops, people listen, and it can get really bad, but it gets really bad when everything else has failed, is my feeling. Maybe, you know, some Americans would tell me that's not exactly the case, but I feel that in France, more often than not, you start with the strike. Now, this specific strike is really bad, and I think this has gone so bad because negotiations and discussions have consistently failed throughout the past few weeks, months. But in general, in France, you're like, the strike is one of the first weapons that the workers pull out of their belt and go like, well, we're going to do that. Which is, without, you know, value judgment on it, is different from many other countries, I think. Even in Finland, where I now live, there are strikes, as I've seen in the past few weeks, but it's like the last resort.
Yes, in France, we mostly have a protest first and negotiate later, I think, culture. That's what you're saying. I think even without going as far as Finland, which is very far from France, you can go to Germany, where you I think the culture is more of negotiating a lot, or in this in Switzerland, you're gonna negotiate a lot more and protest and strike later on if it doesn't work. But it's a last resort. Really not in France. I don't know. I think we said it. It's from the historical culture of the country, which you said in other countries the rights to worker were governed by politics in the left and right wing, between the left and right wing struggling and fighting and getting this right for the workers. What you're saying is that voting and getting the people elected gave workers the rights we had to fight in France, I think, to get. And that's the key to understand that culture, I think. Because striking and protesting were a valid way of getting things in the past, I think it cemented in our culture as a way of things working. And maybe in the modern history of France, we tend to use it a lot. But I think that's why in France it's so different from other countries.
You know, that's the impression I have kind of as well. But I think we tend to forget the how much striking there was, especially maybe in the UK, where I believe Thatcher broke the unions. And in the US, even Reagan broke the unions. There was, I'm sorry, I don't remember who it was, but there was a really interesting, was it Planet Money? An episode about Reagan breaking the unions in the air traffic controller strikes, which it was really interesting because honestly, even from a left-wing point of view, the traffic controllers went too far in their demands and striking. And Reagan was kind of, I think, arguably justified in what he did, which was quite harsh, but essentially the air traffic controllers got something that they asked for, and then they were like, we're in a strong position, we're going to ask for more. And then Reagan was like, well, in that case, F you. But that had an effect, a lasting effect on the strike culture in the US, where unions were very wary of striking. So that happened in the past 30 years. Similarly, in the UK, there were enormous strikes, like for dire issues as well, and Thatcher broke the unions also. So I think maybe in France what happened was that there wasn't this breaking of the unions. I don't know. I think someone more versed in that kind of history could tell us more about this. But certainly the feeling is that in those other countries, at least the UK and the US, but even in Finland, for different reasons, and for the Germany, as you said, in Switzerland and many other countries, the approach to strike is different. So I think we've kind of made that pretty clear. Strikes are regarded as a negotiating tactic almost.
Yeah, and I will say that while no government in France have really
broken the unions.
Broken the unions. I would say that in the past 15 years or so, the strike were not that effective anymore. I remember that under President Sarkozy, there was a similar reform, not similar, but another pension system reform that actually got through because the strike wasn't that effective, and he got the reform went as planned. I don't think he made any, I don't remember if he made any negotiation with a union back then. But
I mean, there's always negotiations. I think maybe that's something that we might be misrepresenting. The government and the unions and the representatives of the workforce and the bosses, company heads, are always talking. It's not like they start by going down the in the street. They're always talking, but negotiations break down very quickly, more quickly than in other countries, and the strikes are used as a pressure tool as negotiations are happening.
Well, yeah, what I wanted to say was that he didn't give the strikers, I don't think he gave the strikers anything they demanded, I think, back then. And my point was that in the last 15 years, the strike weren't that effective. There was really some kind of a comeback with the Yellow Jacket 1 year ago. And I think the strike we have right now about the pension system is really born from the Yellow Jacket 1 year ago. I don't think it would be that effective if there wasn't the Yellow Jacket 1 year ago. In fact, there was a labor law, I think, 2 years ago, with a large reform for the train system in France, the train workers. And they went on strike, like we said, and it didn't work very well. And I don't think they got a lot of things from that strike, and it didn't work. That was also because President Macron was just elected, and it was in full force from that vote. So he had the
backing of the people, share, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, the mind share and the power to go through with this reform, which is not really the case anymore. I don't know if you would say that's fair and you would agree, but I don't think he has the same kind of mindshare and power that he had like 2 years ago.
I think you would need to be heavily biased to think that he has the approval that he did 2 years ago. His approval plummeted. He managed his communication very poorly, and managed the things he did very poorly. He was elected to do things from the center, and he did the things that could be argued by different people, but he did the things that he wanted to do right of center, and none of the things that everyone was hoping he would do left of center. So he's been labeled a right-wing president and enemy of the worker, essentially, that he wants to destroy. Like, he's the banker president who's protecting the rich, which I think, given what's happened, is a fair view to take. Even me, who supported him and still think there are a lot of things that are... I don't judge him as harshly as many people in France do, but I think it's completely understandable that he is viewed that way and his approval has plummeted. Like, he's consistently mismanaged what he does, partly because I think he has a specific view of himself and his action that is not shared by the rest of the country, and even not shared by some of his friends, political friends. But I would say, however, what you've said about the way things have moved for retirement reform in the country, I don't have the same view, because for me... there are a few things that are very explosively debated in the country. And one of those, probably the most explosively debated, is retirement reform. And consistently for the past 20 to 30 years, France is no different than other countries. Population is aging, and maybe a little bit less than in other countries, but with the aging population and the working conditions changing, people being able to be healthy longer and less younger people to pay for pensions, I think most people agree that the system has to be adapted. And many governments have tried to adapt it as much as it should be, or, and of course everyone disagrees on how it should be, but going as far as possible to satisfy the power in place, and that has never been possible to achieve because the population is so strongly against reform, and you're always going to have people who say this is the way we should go, this is not the way we should go. So the reform is always, for the past 30 years, have never gone as far as it should. And in my view, what Macron is trying to do now is to do the quote-unquote definitive reform in ways that even I am not sure are the right things. And I think I will mention, to go into the specific, two aspects of this entire debate. And you can tell me, Kasim, if this is accurate or not, in your opinion. One aspect, which is very important in the French psyche, is the both are linked, but it's the special regimes spéciaux in French, which address retirement conditions for specific parts of the worker force. And of course, the most iconic one is the train conductors for the trains in France in general. For decades and decades, they had negotiated a specific retirement regime, which allowed them to go into retirement earlier than other workers because it was more difficult working conditions. Obviously, when you had to shovel coal into the furnace in the train, then that would, you know, destroy your health faster than the guy that was punching tickets in the train. And they have kept that specific regime for, and this is just one example. I don't mean to harp on that one, but I think it's the one that would come to most people's minds when you talk about this issue in France. And some people will tell you, well, it's already been adapted, kind of, and this is a non-issue because it's so few people. Why do you harp on this? And some people will tell you, well, this is ridiculous. They retire at 62. Which, again, is not super accurate, but it's the image that people have. They definitely retire earlier than other workers. And we can't keep doing that. We should push the retirement age further. And again, the people on the left will tell you, well, no, we shouldn't push retirement age further. And I think here we're getting to the crux of the political issue. They will tell you, we have money somewhere, mostly in the pockets of the rich. Let's take that money, let's tax a little bit more the people who make a lot of money. And again, this is not something outrageous. I think it's a debate that should happen, and the reasonability of these measures should be evaluated. Let's tax a little bit more here and there and give everyone more time to enjoy life and keep the retirement age at a reasonable level. Let's not push it to, you know, 68, 67 or further. And let's make sure that everyone can work a full life and then enjoy some time when they retire at a not unreasonable age. So this is the debate on that, you know, train conductor thing that is emblematic of that point. And the other thing is, linked to that, the specific reform that Macron wants to put in place is a flat system for everyone, which, again, even me, I don't think I agree with, because different types of workers have different conditions and can work longer than others. So there should be a system in place to help people who can't work anymore. The example I always take is, you know, a construction worker is not going to be able to work as long as me, whose job is to sit in front of a computer. So I should be working longer than a construction worker. The way they do it in Finland is that it's determined, I think, by medical conditions. So if a doctor says, well, you know, your back is in bad shape, so you have the right to retire earlier, I'm talking about construction workers here, not me. But whatever the work you do, medically, if you're not able to work anymore, then you're going to be able to, you know, do another job or go on retirement and stuff like that. The image I have, at least, of the reform that Macron is proposing is, you know what? Everyone should be on the same basis and everyone should work until, you know, that specific age. And if you want to stop working before, you can from a certain age, but then you'll get less money, which I'm sure there are ways to address medical issues. But the idea that everyone should be working no matter the type of job they do until the same age seems unfair to me as well. I'm sure it's addressed in the reform somehow, but yeah, that is an important point of it. So I talked a lot, Kasim, about the train conductors. Do you agree that this is a symbolic one? And then about the flat age of retirement in this reform.
Yeah, it's clearly the most iconic example you can give to explain the matter. I think there are two parts of this discussion. One is how the government is presenting its reform and how they are discussing it. I think part of the of why people are protesting and getting angry right away is because the history of government Macron to present and enforce his reform without discussing a lot, even in the parliament, about his reforms. So there is really a way of defiance.
Defiance, yeah.
Yeah, defiance.
I mean, discussing, they have a majority. So
yeah,
if
sure.
We go by the rules of the Republic, which again, some people will say that this system should be changed because it's not fair enough, but you're making it sound a little bit like it's undemocratic.
No,
it isn't.
Yeah, I agree. I we should change the system. I'm part of the people that think that, but that's not what the point I was trying to make. He has the votes and the constitutional right to get this reform and push it. But what I meant is that the way he presented it and the way he's trying to make it vote by the parliament and stuff like this make people tend to be angry and fear this reform, even without reading or really analyzing it. They start by getting fear by the way he's presenting the reform, I think.
So the style is as problematic as the substance of
it's not like it's not like he said listen guys, we have a problem with our retirement, like you said, Patrick, the population is getting older and we have less money for to pay this growing number of retirement plan, so we need to do something, and let's have a discussion and on this topic only, because as you said, it's a topic that has really had a lot of heated debate over the past few decades, and let's have a discussion and let's see who gets the right solution that will please the most, I get that the reform was part of the of his program and he has the right to and part of this of his political plan, and he has the right to push
to
his reform
it, yeah.
And the idea of his reform, and I believe he thinks he has the right idea, and maybe it is the right idea of which reform to go through, but I think it would have been maybe wiser to present it like you did and have an open discussion about the topic. And
so do you think it would have gone more smoothly if he had done that? Like all of a sudden people would have said, yeah, okay, let's do that reform the way you know, with a few changes, let's do it.
I don't think it would be the same reform, but I don't exactly know, of course, how it would have gone through. But with the open discussion behind him, it would have the grown legitimacy, to push it, I think, because
you know, it's funny because the image I have of people's image of Macron in France. And that might be my own bias. The image I have is that it's almost as bad as the... maybe that's pushing it a little bit too far, but it seems like he can do no right, almost in the way that leftists look at Trump in the US or rightists looked at Hillary Clinton in the last election. And this is an exaggeration. I don't think it's quite that bad, but I think that because of all the mistakes he made and the miscommunications that he did, he's people can't hear him anymore.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I think he should have opened it with a discussion and not...
So to calm things down and to quiet things down, like to say, okay, I know I messed up, you know, I know we don't understand each other, but this is important, guys, let's talk about it, right? This kind of, okay. And he kept going with his, let's just do it style, which was never going to be accepted.
I think, yeah. But after...
Yeah, I think that's fair.
On the reform itself, two things you didn't mention, I think, was that... The general idea of a pension system reform in France is that, as you said, people are going to need to work later on. Most people are going to need to work older than they did. Right now, I think the age at which you can take your retirement is 62. And the idea of the reform with the infamous pivot age is that you should be able to work longer and be with incentives to work longer than that and to be less stressful on the retirement system.
Do you agree from your left-wing point of view, do you agree that this has to happen somehow? Maybe not with the system Macron is proposing, but it has to happen. This people will need to work longer.
I understand why people... that.
but I'm asking what you think.
I don't think I agree because of two things, but maybe I'm wrong. One is the unemployment rate of the elderly, because we are asking, in theory, people to work longer, but they actually don't work that long because they are unemployed most of the time at that age. Companies don't really necessarily want to have a 60 years old game developer in their team. Sometimes they don't necessarily want that.
Game development is an example that's biased because it's a very young industry. But yeah, I get what you mean. Like, if especially let's say you get fired at 57 or you lose your job for some reason, it's difficult at 60 to find a new job as a, I don't know, salesperson or, yeah, it's definitely more difficult.
But you know, if you, of course, I pick the example of a game developer on purpose because it's a young industry, but I'm not really kidding. If the reform asks them to work to 65-year-old or 60, whatever, they are going to need to have workers, to have game developers of 62 to 65 later on. And that's going to happen. And I'm not sure it's going to work that way.
I guess my hope is that this young industry is going to age with its population. And, you know, by 2040, there will be developers that can be that age, but yeah, it's going to be the same. I guess it's more problematic now because that industry is so young, but in 20 years, it's going to be the same as every other industry where that is a problem already. So I understand what you mean. It's not like things are ideal in the other older industries.
Right. And the other thing is that while we age older right now, thanks to a better healthcare system and better access to healthcare, we do age later on, but we have the same, worker and good health age is the same as it was like 20, 30, 40 years ago. Which is, I don't remember, it's like something like 60 years old or around that.
Right. So I've heard that argument before. Let me explain it to the listeners. Essentially, you do live longer, but you don't live longer in good health. Living in good health is roughly until, let's say, 60 or 65 even. But after that, you're starting to get health issues. So the idea of that argument is that sure, you can push the retirement age because you live later, but then you end up pushing people to work until they can't really enjoy life anymore anyway. Because if you ask people to work until, on average, you know, let's say 68, and people on average start getting real health issues when they're 65 or even 70, you're telling them work until you can't enjoy life anymore. So I think that's the argument there. Right.
Yeah. So that's why with both point, that's why I can't say that everyone should work and longer than right now. And that's why I can say yes to your question when you asked if people should work later on.
All right. So what's the solution then? Because we do need money. Let's say, on theory, I agree with you that, you know, if we can get people to work until to get the retirement early enough that they're going to have, I don't know, 10 years of healthy life to enjoy their time, this does, of course, require financing. So how would your camp suggest, and this is an actual question, to finance those still early age or not? Not early age, but unmoving retirement age.
Well, that's where I'm not. I don't think I know enough about our reform or pension system to know how to make it work better.
Oh, I'm not asking you about this pension system. I'm asking you about your ideal solution.
Yeah, I don't know because.
Oh, you can't say that, Kasim. This is where communication breaks down in every country and including in France. And maybe even more in France, because on one hand, I very much respect and agree with the idealism of, you know, any political movement. And there are great ideas on the left. I think there are great ideas on the right as well. I think capitalism gets a really bad rap in France, especially, and we forget a lot of the great things that we've gotten with our systems in the past 50 years. There are bad things too, but the progress of objective reality is staggering, and that's why I don't blame the boomers too much for many things other than, you know, breaking the planet with the ecology issues. But what I'm trying to get at is the ideal situations are great. But at some point, in any other country, you end up sitting down and saying, all right, this is what we would like to aim for, but we need something to work now. So what can we actually do? And both parts of the negotiation discuss and come up with a hopefully reasonable compromise. I feel like in France, and I've talked about this in many areas in my French shows, but I feel like in France, people are unwilling to compromise, to have something to actually be in place that will function even if it's not satisfying their hopes, all of their hopes. So this is where, you know, I get into the rah mode against you. But yeah, what do you say to that, Kasim?
What I say is that I think I didn't made myself clear. I think I personally don't have the solution because I'm not an expert, but I think there are people that I agree with that are proposing things that I would agree with and that are smart.
But like what?
First, one thing you said actually was the example of Finland, where you have the idea of a doctor checking if you're
So the medical, medical conditions,
The medical condition, and I think that's a smart idea to check if someone is in shape to continue working or if he has to start his retirement.
But you don't think there would be, I'm in your camp there, I don't know the exact details of the reform, but you think if the reform were to pass, if someone had a bad back and they would go to the doctor, and the doctor would say, yeah, that person can't be a construction worker anymore, the system would tell them, well, you still have to work, so find another job, rather than allowing for retirement. Is that
what you're saying? Yeah, I think, actually. But of course, it sounds weird like this, but I think that's actually what would happen right now. There is something we didn't discuss here, is how it's important in French culture to have things written in law.
Yeah. Oh, if it's not in the law book, how will you know what to do? Like, you can't not have it written specifically exactly. Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
So right now it's not written in the law that that the doctor can put someone on retirement.
So let me ask you this then. There are different versions of this, and I think I could agree with a doctor-led system. Is it Thomas Piketty, the economist?
I think
He's a darling of the left wing at the moment, and there's he says some really interesting things. There's one thing that he's proposing, which is modulating retirement age with life expectancy on different work categories. So if you're, again, my example of a construction worker, your life expectancy might be lower than if you work as an office clerk like me. And so we would modulate retirement age with life expectancy for that category and work it like that. Of course, it's not a perfect system. It's complicated for people who change jobs, etc. There are many issues, but it's one of the things he's proposing, which I think is interesting. And again, he's a darling of the left, so that is something that could be discussed. It's definitely not in the current project, so it's not part of that discussion. But I would like to point something out and maybe ask you a question at the same time. If that was put in place, or if the doctor-led retirement age was put in place, it would lead to the train conductors, I think, losing their special status. And
And even though, even without that, it would lead to probably office workers working longer.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think the reform wouldn't be successful because of people would argue that it's a measure that
unfair.
Would not be on. Yeah, it would be unfair and on the subject of equality. And because it's you have the difference between equality and equity, I think, and justice. Basically, that's the system. You have the choice between a system where everyone is on the same rights, but that means that some people, like we said, would have issues, health issues, for instance. And you have a system where it's case by case, and it's like what Piketty is proposing, I think. But it's not ideal either, because, like you said, maybe it would lead to train worker working longer, but it will also lead office worker to work in far longer than they do now. And I don't think it will...
far longer than they do now. I think the one thing that I would put forward to me, and that's again another point of breaking down the conversation, there's no doubt that we need to be working longer, everyone. Now, maybe some people need to be working less longer than others. I think office workers, that especially if you're in good health, there's no reason that someone whose job is to file stuff in file cabinets would stop working at, 62, unless they want to and get less retirement money, maybe. But for...
The issue is that people wouldn't agree that they don't want to work longer only to pay for the people that work less. There is this idea, I think that
I don't know that that's the case. We agree to pay for people who have, who don't work because of health issues. We agree to pay for people who don't work because they got laid off. There is a solidarity in France. Mm-hmm. It depends where you push, the limit. And many people would argue, again, as I said in the beginning, that maybe on unemployment benefits we have too much or some things like that. But no one will tell you we shouldn't pay for unemployment benefits.
No, right. But I think that's because it's something passed as a historic thing. And that was given upon us. I don't think any of us that were alive back then to get this right. So it's really...
So you think people would be against it today if it was proposed today, if it didn't exist?
Yeah, I think. Yeah.
See, that's the cynicism of the left wing, the anti-capitalistic view of... Oh, it's all going to shit. People don't care about the poor and things are crap everywhere. And I really don't think that's the view of most people. I think most people, especially in France, maybe we strike instead of voting for Trump, for example. It's like maybe that's our way of releasing the stress or something. I don't know. But I think most people in France are for a certain level of solidarity and helping those who don't have as much. And I think it shows. It's not some golden era of the workers fighting to get things against the establishment that has completely dissipated because the establishment and the capitalists are ruling the world today. I don't think that's I think that's the picture that a lot of people have. But I don't think it's an accurate one. I think a lot of people are for equality and solidarity in France still, and that the current system is satisfactory at 80% for 80% of the population, and that we want to change it a little bit in this or that direction. But mostly people are happy with most of it. You don't think that's the case?
I think that being for something and actually actually agreeing to see it implemented is two things that are different. Mm. And if you ask someone on the street that if people should work less if they have health issue, for instance, they will say, of course, that should be the case. If you get into specific, like see the train workers need to work less, then people are gonna say, "What about me? What do I get here? And okay, why do I need to work harder?"
I think for the
them?
Train workers is a bad example because in all of those systems we described, that would be fair to the people who need to work less. I think the train workers would work more than their work today. I don't see any system, unless I really don't understand how the train workers work. I don't think there's any system that would be objective, that would give the train workers the system they have today. So I don't think that's a good example. If you ask construction workers, again, this is a great, I think it's a good example because they really have a hard life and work life. If you ask people about construction workers, train workers, they wouldn't agree. I don't think people would agree, ah, yeah, train workers, it's so hard, they would need to work less. Construction workers, if you ask people, do you think they should work until 68? I don't think a lot of people, in theory and in actuality, would say, yeah, they need to work until 68. Do you think people would say that?
No, I don't think so. But what I think we are talking here without data, and we are...
Well, of course, it's the Phileas Club. We talk about our feelings and the way we see things. It's not like the definitive expert show.
Because, because we are both French, and I think we are both biased towards... Because I would agree with you that under a fair system, a train worker will work longer, probably, because...
You just got a target on your back from all the unions in the country, just so you know.
Because we don't use coal anymore on trains, so yes, it's less, maybe less hard. But I think we have a bias against train workers because of how we are, I think we are here right now, we have 20 to 30 years of TV news and stuff like this that show us that train workers are working, striking and protesting hard to get what is seen for people, from a lot of people, as an advantage, unfair advantage of over other workers.
Okay, but you still think that they should, in a more fair system, they would work longer.
Yes, but maybe I'm biased. You know what I mean?
No, you can't say either. I mean, yes, maybe you're biased. Maybe we don't know the actuality.
I'm not a train worker, you know.
Sure, of course. But I guess I would get to back to your point, which you were saying, when you're talking about other people, people will say, oh yeah, this is fine, this is whatever. But when you talk about yourself, then all of a sudden you say, oh no, I don't want to work more. And that would be the case for train workers. Would you say, Kasim, that as an office worker, you would be okay with working more than a construction worker? It's the harshest example, but I keep coming back to it.
And I think we are going back to what would be the ideal reform, is that, yes, I would say I think I would be okay to work longer, but you would have to prove to me that it's actually a necessity. It's something that will be really needed. And
so financially, you think there would be other ways to finance retirement pensions, and so maybe we don't need to work until, I don't know, 68 because we're office workers.
Yeah, and like you said, I was going to say the stupid way of thinking it was, but that's not really stupid, just of the taxing the rich way of thinking. It's a bit easy, even in France, we find that solution a bit too easy, because it seems to be the solution to about every issue. And we won't be able to solve every issue with one solution, I think. But that's part of it. And that's where you can't really pull out the reform from the climate in France, where you had the yellow jacket 1 year ago, and you had the President Emmanuel Macron did a lot of things on the right side of the spectrum instead of the left side. One of the key thing he did that is strike as an it's a striking.
It's emblematic. I know where you're going, and I agree.
He lowered the tax the tax for the richest in the country, which is something that is seen as really bad in France for the left side, because you're lowering the tax for the rich when the country needs more money and have financial issue on multiple topics like the pension system. So it's it has been seen in France as giving back to the rich instead of giving back to the poor.
Let me explain what that tax is,
it's
because
not that bad, it's not necessarily a bad idea from Macron on an international perspective. The fact that he did that in one of the first thing he did created that climate. But I will let you explain.
No, I completely agree. I think that's a very fair way of characterizing that action. But just so people understand what that tax is, it's not quite lowering the tax on the rich. It's a supplemental tax on the richest citizens that earn or that have a net worth of more than €1 million. They have a supplemental tax of, I don't know, I can't remember how much it was, but it was like less than 1%. And so if you have a net worth of more than that much, you had to pay not on your income. The income was taxed as well to, you know, a level that is determined, that grows when you earn more money. You pay a larger percentage of that money as income tax. And that was a supplemental tax on your net worth that was for having the money you have to pay a percentage of it to the state. And he changed it. He basically removed it, but he kept removed it on the reinvestments, but kept it on some of the parts of the things like owning the things that you own. So there were part of it that was that disappeared, part of it that stayed, and the logic behind it is that it pushes people who have a lot of money out of the country. Now, I don't know how accurate that is. It makes sense to me instinctively. But in any case, it represented a small amount, a very small amount of the income of the state and the negative effect in their mind. I think everyone admits it's mostly symbolic, but the symbol, as Kasim said, is very, very strong for the country, and that helped create that image of Macron, which is anti-poor, pro-rich. Now, I think the anti-poor, pro-rich is unquestionable in France because of that measure for most people. I think for most people listening outside of the country, where that kind of tax doesn't even exist, and I think would appear extremely unfair given the fact that they already pay their income tax on their revenue, on their income, and that is an additional tax on the things they own, on which they have already paid taxes because it was purchased or inherited or whatever with income. I think the opinion on that, maybe I'm wrong, but I think the opinion on that from people outside the country would be very different from the opinion inside the country. But again, I'm not at all disputing the fact that it was a pivotal decision from Macron. If he had done it, you know, if he had done all the things for the poorest among us that he should do in the beginning and the things for the richest afterwards, things would have gone very, very differently for him. And that specific action was very important in defining that.
Right. And that, and this creates the climate where I don't see a reason. It hasn't been really proven to me that we should all work longer because we have financial issue with the pension system when we are actually lowering some of the, or modifying the way riches are paying taxes. You can forget it when you're talking about the pension system.
It stays in your mind, and people keep that as the, well, you're asking us to work longer and pay more, but at the same time, you're giving money back to the people who already have enormous amounts.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I really don't think that that tax was fair at all. I think it was a dumb idea, and it's ridiculous. But I could absolutely be convinced of increasing the income tax on, you know, the richest part of the population. So it's really not, at least for me, it's not about not taxing the rich. It's just that this specific tax seemed dumb to me.
And I would agree. On this, that that's a way of people are seeing this reform and not the actual thing the reform is doing. And the issue, the other issue is that Macron won't do what you're saying, that changing the income taxes, for instance. I don't think he's gonna put them higher
For the rich,
to balance the reform he did.
So, and I think at that point we get into another question, which is there too much income tax to begin with in the country? And that's a question that is universal, the size of the state compared to the income tax. And I always go to the northern countries where things are a little bit more balanced. I don't think I'm wrong in saying that France has a pretty large income tax rate already. And so in the case of France, when we look at that, I would say I'm not sure increasing the amount of tax is necessarily the right idea, because as you said earlier, you can always increase the amount of tax for everything if you want to find this as the only solution. And the reason I go there is that I think the income tax compared to taxes in general in France compared to the rest of the world is already really high. And maybe that's not actually true. I think it is. But that would be my thinking there. That's why in other countries, I might say, well, in those countries, yes, we should raise the taxes, but it's different conditions.
And only on and these taxes only do so much. So by that, I mean that if you're raising the income taxes, you're going to push people with money to invest in owning things like real estate. And that will make them maybe have less taxes, but they will still have the wealth to be to own several things. So it's not really a solution either. So,
you know, it's really interesting. I'm loving our conversation, because certainly we're disagreeing on stuff, but I think you are admittedly on the left side of the political spectrum, and we are agreeing, even though I'm pointing out things that we're disagreeing with, we're agreeing on a lot of things. And those things you're saying are traditionally, I think, right-wing arguments. And some of the things I've been saying about, you know, the aligning my ideas with those of Thomas Piketty, who is a left-wing person. I think this is the case in French society more than what I've seen other countries. You're like, okay, what's this idea? I'm not sure I agree with that. This is going too far. Listen to this one. Maybe it makes sense. Regardless of the origin of the idea, to an extent, I think when you go into, you know, the parliament but the population has those kinds of open dialogues more than the image I have of other countries. And that might be because we have our such a wide political life, because we have the two-turn system. I often talk about the one-turn system in the US, where you only have two parties and you have just one chance to decide. And so you can't, you know, experiment essentially, or vote for the thing we often say is, in France, we vote for the thing we want first and then against the thing we don't want. And it has its problems as well, but at least it fosters that culture of, I'm going to look at all the ideas. Probably I'm not going to go that route, because historically I'm more of that family party, but in general, you look at a lot of different things, or I think a lot of people do. Not everyone does, but
I think to underline your point, I think as in France, we have really strong political culture, and we have a lot of debates. For instance, we have shows on TV at prime time. We have like three hours debates that people actually watch on national TV. And
those aren't on 24 hours news channels. Some of them, yes, of course, but not just, not only.
Yeah.
And, like, it's not partisan stuff. It's not part. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm thinking about that show on France 2, which is one of the main national TV stations.
Yeah.
Where you have debates for 3 hours and a lot of people watch it. It's really popular. And I think that's something we see not only in France, but that's a strong part of France. Mm. And as you said, it's I think it's create a climate where people are discussing a lot of about political issues, making political jokes all the time, and we have a lot of discussion about politics in our country. And as you said, you pointed at it briefly, but there is the state of mind in the parliament is really, really different. Where you would have to, there is a strong partisan sentiment where you need to always be against whatever people that are not in your party are proposing. Mm. Or you always on the opposite side, you always have to be everything for everything you're party is proposing, even though you declared on Twitter 3 years ago that you were against it. Now you're in favor of that reform because you're part of the government, or you're against the government, and you're gonna need. There is a strong partisanship in the parliament that is not really the case in the population. And maybe that's part of the issue, like I said, about the pension system reform. Macron is trying to, or was trying actually to push the reform through the instances of the government and with the parliament, which is, again, his total right to do, and he was elected to do that. But it's the parliament system and the and our system is in need of a reform. That's what I believe.
Of overhauling. So you want the Sixth Republic to come forth. Well, as a conclusion, I will ask you where you think this is going to end, because it's already been one of the longest strikes and demonstrations in the history of the country, which is storied with many of them already. How do you think it's going to end? When? What will happen? What do you think?
Well, with my cynicism, I think the reform will actually go through. I think the government is going to give a couple of things to unions. They actually started doing that by changing a bit of the discussion on the pivot age, even though it's not really that different in the law right now. But they are moving a bit, but I think the core of the reform will stay the same. And Macron will succeed to push it through because it's, like as you said, it's maybe the longest strike in recent history. But because it's the longest strike, I think we are closer to the end than from the start. And we haven't seen the government move a lot of his ideas on this reform. So that if the past month didn't give them a reason to push back the reform or to cancel a few things, I don't think the next few weeks will. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you think. And interestingly, I think this might benefit Macron in the public opinion. In general, I think if that happens, I think it might. He's gonna give a couple of things to the unions, as you said, but he started on such a immovable stance. Maybe that was, you know, calculated. Maybe that's what he wanted to do.
The unknown factor on that, and I will agree with you, but the unknown factor of that is the police, actually, and the chance of having an accident or something severe happening during the protest, because we have right now we have a bit of an issue with the way you are aware of that, of the way our cops are managing the protests.
There have been numerous instances of police violence that are well documented and not very well dealt with, I think.
And that's I would think that's the part where Macron is risking a bit on his approval rate. That's the part. If he gets to push it through without more accident and something severe happening, then I would agree with you, he's going to come out as victorious of this. But something could drastically change over the next weeks if there is an accident, for instance.
Right. If you know, someone dies in a police confrontation or something like that, yeah, I think that would be... I agree that he's pushing things to the limit there, because he hasn't addressed the issues of police violence, and that is becoming increasingly difficult to let go, I think. So yeah, I agree that could be an issue there. I mean, if something really bad happens, he could then come out against it. I think that it could be managed, maybe. I don't know. I think he's possibly, I don't know if he's too stubborn and dumb or super clever and looking, you know, three moves ahead of everyone else. I have no idea. I think he's intelligent. He's a clever guy. But I don't know if he's too full of himself, or if he knew that because of the reform's unpopularity, he would face a gigantic social movement, and thought, you know, I have to stay strong from the beginning and then give a couple of things and then the reform might go through. Or if he was just like, F everyone, I do what I want. I really don't know.
Is he really stubborn or really clever? It's a question I've seen asked about another president, but I will let you conclude.
You're talking about Trump, of course. I think that is an unfair comparison. But
right.
I think you agree as well that it's unfair.
Sure.
Yeah. But you know, it's possible that all of those people are really clever, actually. I think it's very unlikely in the case of Trump. He's very lucky and peculiar, but I think Macron possibly is looking even beyond France. I think he's looking at Europe, and I think he's looking at 20 years down the line, and he has an eye on making Europe a stronger, unified entity. And that's what he's looking at. And he's playing the game to get there. And
the long game.
You know, the long game to become president of a more federalized Europe, which is being more and more difficult because people are against a more federalized Europe already. But I think that's what he's looking at. And yeah, we'll see what happens. But I tend to agree with you on the resolution of this current crisis. And what I really hope will happen is that he makes this go through, and then he spends the next 2 years of his presidency, the last 2 years, I should say, doing stuff for the less fortunate, for the yellow jackets and for the poorest, and like trying to manage that aspect. And I have very little hope that it will actually happen, but that's what I'm hoping.
I also have very little hope on that. Maybe something that will be, I don't know, maybe more believable will be reform on the ecological things. Yeah, I don't think he has managed to tackle that the right way right now. And
yeah.
It's something that would. I don't know if it's I don't know if it's the same everywhere, but in France, ecological issues are really strong in the left side. It's a really important topic on the left side of the spectrum, and maybe doing stuff for the environment, reform for the environment, would make maybe he made his approval rate higher on the left side.
You're completely right. I think if he tackles the environment, you're saying on the left side, I think it's on both sides now. And I think a lot of people, if things aren't done, a lot of people are going to just vote for the Green Party, just, you know, even from the right side, because the Green Party is traditionally very much aligned with the left side. But I think people will just vote for the Green Party because, you know, F everyone else, we need to do something, which wasn't the case even 3 years ago for the last election. And I think if he actually does tackle the ecology in a serious way, more serious than he has until now, I think he gets reelected. I think that you're right. It's the key thing. And it would be very clever and important for him to do that. He might. If he gets this through, it gives him the political capital with his camp, with the center and the right, to do things in that way. The big problem is you start tackling industry problems, which yep. I haven't seen the willingness on his part to upset until now. So,
yeah, that's an issue.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for spending an hour and a half talking about France and all of that. I really appreciate it, Kasim. I know it's, you know, we have differing views and it's in English. It's not necessarily the easiest thing for you. And even though your English is wonderful. And I mean, just coming to talk about these very core issues to the country and personal issues that we are immersed in on a daily basis is not necessarily something everyone would do. So thank you very much for doing that.
Thank you for having me. And sorry if I didn't have the perfect solution for reform.
How dare you not have the perfect solution to one of the biggest issues that is facing the entire world right now. Next, you're going to tell me that you don't have the perfect solution for the environmental crisis we're facing. How dare you? Although, you know, their solutions would exist. But anyway, eat less meat. That's one solution. Impossible Foods is great. And corn and all of those, that helps. All right, talking to Americans, I'm guessing that's not going to be a very popular idea. Do people, I'm sure, you know, I'm certain there are a lot of French people listening as well. Where would they go if they want to find more from you?
Well, mostly on Twitter. I want to say on Twitter at NotKassim because I tweet in both French and sometimes in English. I think that's the best place to see what thing I do.
Excellent. Not Kasim will be in the show notes. For me, it's Not Patrick, inspired by Not Kasim, of course. On Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
No.
In Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And of course, if you enjoy the show, if you like it, if you think it's valuable, then you can support it at patreon.com/thePhileas Club. You can support it financially. The link is in the show notes. And I very much appreciate all of those who already do. Thank you immensely for supporting this this show, which is a little bit peculiar, a little bit different from what you usually get. So thank you very much. Thank you, Kasim. Thank you, everyone. And we'll talk to you in a few weeks. Bye.
Hold up. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.